Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, your host, Caroline Forn. Now, for the last few episodes, I was joined by various guests who, just like me, have experienced anxiety, and they share their story in different kinds of anxiety manifesting in different ways, what works for them and what doesn't. This week, however, I want to bring it back to the experts. I'm joined by one of my favourite people. It's Orla Walsh Nutrition. That's what she's known as on Instagram, but she's a dietitian. She's an absolute legend, and there is absolutely no bullshit about her. Take what you think you have in your head about an expert as being not relatable and just throw it out the window, because this girl is a human being, you'll be surprised to know. Orla joins me to talk about anxiety in relation to nutrition. So what you should be eating, what you shouldn't be eating. And specifically, we go into a lot about the gut, because obviously my gut was such a huge problem for me growing up. Still is a bit of an issue sometimes. It is something that gives me anxiety, but then my anxiety is something that triggers my gut. So if you're anything like me, this is the episode for you. There's quite a lot to unpack in it, but I really hope you enjoy it and I hope you take something away from it. I've definitely been writing notes as I've been editing for things that I need to start introducing myself day to day. So be sure to listen with your full attention. And as always, thank you so much for joining me on this journey of owning it. Hope you've been enjoying the series so far. If you're new, welcome. I hope you get a chance to go back and listen to some of the older episodes. And as always, please keep subscribing and reviewing. It means the world to me. Thank you so much and enjoy.
The first question I want to ask you, and it will seem like so unbelievably state the obvious to you and I, but I find when people talk to me about their anxiety, they don't believe or they don't realise that what you eat, what you put into your body can really have an effect on your mental health.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You see, if you look at it logically, I think people are very comfortable with the notion that what we eat affects our physical health. But you see, our body is connected to our head. You know, our head isn't totally separate. So of course, what we eat is going to affect our brain and our mental health as well. And it's a chicken and egg situation, because what we eat is going to affect our mental health, but our mental health is going to affect what we eat. And sometimes it's confusing for people to know what has come first. But absolutely, could you change how you eat and your general food plan across a week and have better mental health from that? Yes, definitely.
And do you think people are coming around to the idea now, or is there still, you know, you talk about the difference or the kind of disconnect between mind and body. Are we still not there in terms of accepting it as a whole?
I think we're getting there, but I don't think one of the most common presentations I'm asked to do is food and mood.
Really?
Yeah, because people are still surprised that they're too connected. And I always explain it about, you know, do you know your head's connected to your body? You know, and I just kind of say it like that, because as soon as you do, people go, oh, well, of course it is, you know.
Yeah, I know.
And it just opens their mindset to it. And then once you open their mindset, then they're available then to give the information.
For me, when my anxiety was so acute and so bad back in 2014, and my doctor at the time was saying, you know, you need to be eating more broccoli, I was like, fuck's sake, like, this plate of broccoli isn't going to make me not feel anxious. And I suppose for me, nutrition is one element of managing anxiety, managing stress, but it's a really crucial one. I think it's one that people kind of overlook.
Yeah, I think when people have any sort of mental ill health, they kind of go, okay, well, what can I do to directly affect that? And what everyone needs to do is take a really big step back and look at their overall lifestyle and look at it holistically and go, everything from what music are we listening to? Because, you know, I wouldn't feel a pep in my step if I was constantly listening to Adele and Ed, yeah, you know? So it's actually going, and it's funny when you actually take a step back and you're looking after your mental health. Like, it's so funny. I've recently started to nearly only listen to Motown because it's such upbeat music, you know, or inspiring music. But when you think about it, it's everything. It's the music we listen to. It's the people we hang around with and are let into our inner circle. But it's our food. It's our exercise. It's how we talk to ourselves. It's all of these things.
Yeah.
So I think I'd encourage everyone to not just look and go,
one thing.
I'm trying to manage it, so I'm going to a psychologist. That's brilliant, and I would definitely encourage that. But I would go, actually take a step back even further and go, what else in my lifestyle can I change?
In Owning It, I sort of refer to that as taking a helicopter view of your life and looking at, you know, because people feel like their anxiety has come about for no good reason. And maybe it's something to do with their lifestyle. Maybe it's a stress at work, or maybe it's a simple fact of they've been having 2 Red Bulls a day for the last 2 weeks and they're starting to feel the effects of it and they don't realize it. So it's, I always say, whatever you're doing, it's one aspect, it's one thing. Even medication, people might think that's just a cop-out, but it's one piece of the puzzle. And
it is.
Nutrition is such a huge one. I remember, you know, when my anxiety was really bad and I was not leaving the house and I just wanted to comfort eat. And I was like, this bit of chocolate is going to maybe very temporarily make me feel a little bit of comfort. And
a hug and a wrapper.
Yeah, a hug and a wrapper. And I had no appreciation for the cumulative effects of these things. So on a very basic level, where are we going wrong with what we're eating and anxiety?
Well, I would take a step back, because I'm sure there's plenty of people listening that feel anxious at times but don't suffer from anxiety.
Yes.
Or they're listening because a loved one does.
Yeah.
And they want to learn a little bit more of that. But at the same time, they can feel better and feed their mood a bit better. So I would encourage people to take a full step back and actually look at, instead of individual foods, but the balance of their diet. And when we talk about the balance of their diet, I think we get it all wrong, because what we do is we talk about it at a daily basis or a weekly thing, like a tot up. It's nearly like how we deal with taxes, when actually what you need to be doing is look at it from meal to meal. So are you eating regularly enough? We can't allow long gaps between our meals, because I don't think anyone is mentally well when they're hungry.
And I couldn't eat at all when my anxiety was so bad. I mean, I didn't have any meals. I was nibbling on a bit of bread like a rabbit.
Yeah, so some people starve their feelings and some people feed them. And it's a natural gut reaction that we're all kind of nearly born with. If I get upset, I don't eat. When some of my friends get upset, they naturally go to eat. But I would encourage people to go, okay, well, am I eating regularly enough? You know, am I allowing long gaps between meals? And then what are your meals made up of? Because if you stabilize your blood sugar levels, you will feel so much better from that. Your energy and motivation will be better, but your mood will be better too. Ask any type 1 diabetic. So if you ask a type 1 diabetic, how do you know your bloods are running high? Usually they bring up the fact that they are so cross. And if you ask a type 1 diabetic to describe what low blood sugar levels feels like, they will say things like, oh, I get really anxious, I get really irritable, they get shaky, they get clammy, their heart rate goes like the clappers. So they know that they're running low because of all those symptoms. But if anyone's ever suffered from a panic attack, you can see that there's some symptoms there that are quite similar. That sense is, like, I'm not saying that they're the same thing, but I'm saying that the symptoms are similar. So what I encourage people to go, okay, well, I need to balance my meals a little bit better. So to balance your meals a little bit better, you really need to focus on 2 or 3 things. So is there adequate protein at your mealtimes? Because often, for example, people might come in and they eat porridge for breakfast, and porridge is perfectly healthy. But if they make it on almond milk, banana on top, again, it sounds really healthy, but there's no protein there. There's not enough. And so a simple change by going, okay, well, make a porridge on milk or soy milk or hemp milk, and all of a sudden there's now protein in their porridge, and that's going to be a much more balanced meal and their blood sugar levels are going to be much more stable. So protein is one thing that people tend to miss, and people tend to miss even if they're healthy eaters. So for another example would be they have veg soup at lunch and brown bread. And you're going, okay, well, that sounds healthy, but where's the protein? Mm. So what I'd encourage people to do is first step, look at the protein. Am I getting adequate protein at my mealtime? It's not a high protein diet,
yeah.
But it's adequate protein. And then you add in enough fiber. So fiber is, again, how we stabilize our blood sugar levels. If you consider a bucket with a hole in it, we want the contents of the bucket to be drip fed. Not this like gush. The gush that the hole in the bucket is so big. So what we want is we want that food to leave our stomach really, really slowly. Because if it leaves our stomach slowly, it goes into our bloodstream slowly and it's delivered to our body in a really manageable way. So again, you look at the fiber and you go, am I getting enough fiber? So am I getting 2 to 3 pieces of fruit or veg with every meal? Wow. And so it's kind of around a third or half of your meal is going to be fruit or veg.
Okay, and then another third will be protein.
Yeah, and then the final third would be your slow release or your good quality carbohydrates. But I would encourage people tend to eat enough carbohydrates despite this low carbohydrate movement years ago. But I encourage people to make sure there's enough protein, enough fiber and fat. So a healthy source of fat with every meal, again, to slow down the release of that food from their belly into their body. And that keeps their blood sugar levels really stable.
And how does the blood sugar levels directly increase or affect anxiety?
How I describe it is our brain, right? Our brain is super duper active. And it's so active. It's such a tiny little tissue. So it's around 2% of our overall weight. Okay, it's this kind of very complex fat blob, basically, and it weighs nearly nothing. But it's so active and the neurons in it are so active that it requires 20% of our overall energy intake each day, or calorie intake. Now, the brain functions on carbohydrate.
Oh.
Yeah. So the only thing the brain feeds on, unless it's in extreme circumstances, is carbohydrate. So around 130 grams of carbohydrate, or around 500 calories worth of carbohydrate each day, are being pumped to our head just to feed our brain at rest.
Wow.
So it's quite remarkable. So if we keep our blood sugar level stable, we're just feeding our brain at a really stable pace as well. Okay. And our brain doesn't like when our blood sugar levels go low, and it doesn't like when our blood sugar levels go high.
Okay.
So I would kind of explain it. It's obviously a little bit more complicated than that, but I don't think anyone needs to understand that to be able to change their behaviors. But the brain basically feeds on carbohydrate, keep your blood sugar levels stable, blood carbohydrate levels stable, and it will have a huge impact on your, like I said, your mood, but also your energy and your motivation. If your energy is good, you've motivation to eat better, you've motivation to move your body a bit more, so to exercise, but you've also motivation, you know, to get up, get outside, socialize, and other things that are really, really important in controlling
your mental health. Do you find that people who come to you and are maybe doing the whole low carb thing because of Instagram, or, you know, they want to look good, they think carbs are bad, do you find that they're suffering with anxiety more?
It depends. There's always going to be an outlier. So some people go on a low carb diet and they've never felt better. And there'll always be an outlier. So you can't kind of say everyone falls under the same category. However, I've seen people come in, and when I actually put in the right amount of carbohydrate for them, they get huge results. So when you look at the right amount of carbohydrate, like how much do we need? You really have to consider carbohydrates similar to putting petrol into a car. So when I drive my car, I burn more petrol the further I drive. I burn more petrol the faster I drive, and I burn more petrol the more frequently I use my car. So the three F's: further, faster, and frequently. And when it comes to our body and carbohydrate, we burn through more carbohydrate the further we move, the faster we move, or the more frequently we're moving. So we need to look at carbohydrates similar to how we look at petrol in a car. So where carbs have got their bad rep, because, you know, you do have to consider body image as well in anxiety. So obviously there's lots of things you can do to help people have a more positive body image. Sometimes people want to lose a little bit of weight in order to achieve that. So everyone's different. But carbs have been victimized over the years because carbs make you fat. But if we go back to that car analogy, if you're filling up the petrol tank and you hear the click and the petrol tank is full and you keep on putting petrol in, it's going to spill out onto the ground. When it comes to our body, our tank is our muscles. If we keep on putting carbohydrate in, it's going to spill out into fat storage. So it's not that carbs make us fat. It's that we're not taking in the right amount of carbs for our activity levels. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's the big thing. So I think people need to stop fearing foods, especially the likes of carbohydrates, when it comes to mental health, but tailoring them a little bit more to how far they're moving, how fast they're moving, or how frequently okay. they're moving.
Talk to me about cortisol. Like, for anxiety, it's kind of public enemy number one. And for yeah. me, I would have done whatever I could to keep it under control. How does cortisol interact with what we eat and how it functions in our body?
Well, the thing is, it's always... cortisol gets a blame for a lot of these things. And how I bring it back a step again and say, okay, we've got the sympathetic nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight. And if you could imagine you're an animal and you hear a gunshot, that what happens is a sympathetic nervous system sparks, it gets turned on, and the carbohydrate from our tank, from our muscles, goes into our blood, and then the animal gets ready to run like the clappers or fight. So in order to run like the clappers or fight, it needs carbohydrate in the bloodstream. That's why it's now entered. And it needs its blood vessels dilated so the blood can flow. And it needs to, you know, eyesight more honed in. So it's this kind of highly alert situation. So that's a sympathetic nervous system. And people who suffer a little bit more with their anxiety, I spend a bit too much time in that. Mm-hmm. In that.
I know. I'm well familiar.
Now, the other one is the parasympathetic nervous system.
Your best friend.
Yeah, everyone's best friend is the rest and digest. So I would encourage people to look at it kind of and go, okay, well, how do I know the sympathetic nervous system is switched on? And your gut will tell you, you know,
literally,
it really will. So when the sympathetic nervous system is switched on, okay, so what happens at the start of an exam? There's a queue for the loo. What happens at the start of a 10K race? There's a queue for loo. So sometimes our gut is triggered by our nerves, our nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. And we go to the bathroom a little bit more, or we get a bit more bloated, or we get an upset tummy. So your stomach will tell you.
And is that because your gut doesn't need to be digesting food when you're in this fight or flight mode? It's sort of
You need to be legging it away from harm, or
so
else
it's
fighting.
Like, let's get this out of here so that we can run.
Yeah, let's dump it, let's get rid of it, it's not helpful right now. Yeah, so that's really what happens. And the thing is that you need to be switching on that parasympathetic nervous system more in order to rest and digest. So in order to digest our food a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's very common for people with anxiety to have gut issues. And that's why there was a great study released that showed that yoga twice a week had really beneficial effects on IBS.
Right.
And this wasn't in people with anxiety now. This was just across the board. Because for everyone, the more calm we are and the more that parasympathetic nervous system is switched on, the better our gut will work.
Yeah, and the better everything feels when you sort of bring your attention to what you can do to sort of soothe your parasympathetic nervous system. So back to cortisol then, is that a key player then in like making the gut shut down? Or
it is. It's one of them, the stress hormone. It's
a slower releasing one, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's that, and there's adrenaline, there's noradrenaline, there's a good few at play.
Okay.
But it tends to be the one that people focus in on because it tends to fight a little bit with the hormones that are trying to make us rest, such as the sleep hormone, melatonin. Mm-hmm. But we do know that it has an impact on someone's body composition and what they eat as well. You know, that's the thing with food and mental ill health, is that which comes first, chicken or the egg. So we know that a diet high in processed food is linked and associated to poorer mental health. But we also know that poorer mental health is a link to and associated with choosing these foods that are more processed.
Okay. Talk about the gut there, which is obviously such an enormous topic in itself.
Yeah.
We could talk for days about it. But for me, and we talked about this before we were recording, like when I was younger, and everyone knows this if they've listened to the first episode, you know, it was always my tummy that gave me trouble. And I do really think that I was an anxious kid. And I think especially in 2014, when my stomach went completely bananas, it was hugely triggered by anxiety.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, I also, like, I've been to you as a client and we've looked at foods that are irritating my gut. It's kind of certain percentage of it is anxiety, and a certain percentage of it is maybe foods that irritate me. And also sometimes when my gut is irritated or I don't feel well, I'm anxious because I don't feel well, and then I don't feel well because I'm anxious. So it's really hard to know.
Yeah, it is hard to know. And I think people with anxiety are quick to kind of blame the anxiety, and sometimes it might be the food intolerance. And I guess it's the whole blame game, and it's hard to know which one is more at fault, but they're both at play. We know that IBS has a seriously large negative impact on someone's quality of life. So there's actually quality of life studies for all the conditions and diseases, and IBS is right up there in the top.
Yeah, and I was diagnosed with that as well, and I was just miserable.
But the thing is that it's, in some ways for years it wasn't taken seriously, because it's not going to kill you, but it's guaranteed to make you miserable.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realise how miserable their IBS makes them until you give them symptom relief.
Oh,
and when you take away all their symptoms and they go, oh my God, this is what normal is.
Yeah.
Then they realise just how much their IBS was playing on their anxiety. And for everyone, it's a different amount. So it's nearly like a Likert scale. I've had clients who suffered from anxiety for years and they've come in, we've dealt with their IBS and their anxiety has gone right down. So it's, and then you have other people where you give them symptom relief and the IBS and it doesn't do anything for their anxiety. But it's nearly like a Likert scale of 1 to 10. You don't know how much it's a part of your anxiety. So it is a chicken and egg situation, but you can't deny the fact that if you have IBS, especially something like diarrhea and urgency and incontinence, like, of course that's going to make you very anxious, you know. And it does have such an impact on your social life. Like, for example, people might go, oh, well, I don't leave the house until I've gone to the loo. Or else they always bring tight clothes, or they always bring a change of clothes in the car just in case something happens.
I know.
So, like, of course that's going to make someone more anxious. So when it comes to the dietary aspects of anxiety, I also look at symptom relief for people. So I don't just look at the things like balancing blood sugar levels and getting enough omega-3s and things like that. I also look at things such as symptom relief and go, okay, you've bloating, let's get rid of that. You've diarrhea, let's get rid of that. You know, and we actually look at all the symptoms they're feeling and target the symptoms. Because if we reduce the symptoms and they feel better, their anxiety gets better.
And how common is it that people who present with anxiety are also presenting with gut issues?
It's fairly common.
They often go hand in hand.
They often do. But the thing is that when people have IBS, it's nearly always put down to stress.
Yeah.
And that's not nice, you know. So, and I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. Because the IBS is stressful and stress exacerbates IBS, you know, they can go together. And everyone feels stress in their life. So it's...
I used to be so upset. I remember coming out of GPs and they're just saying, I hadn't identified anxiety as an issue, but definitely I was having anxiety as a result of feeling unwell. And they were like, are you just a bit stressed or whatever? And I was like, well, of course I'm stressed. Like, I was afraid to go away. I was afraid to go out for dinner because what if I eat something? And like, I had such an immediate reaction to if I ate a meal, regardless of what I ate, when I was so bad that I would just instantly have an upset tummy. So like, I didn't want to go anywhere.
Oh, it's really annoying when I hear that, because I was like, of course the person's going to be upset.
Yeah.
Like, if they have an immediate reaction to eating something that upsets their stomach, like, you would be stressed if the penalty was shitting your pants in public.
Exactly.
Like, how would you know?
Thankfully, I never did that. But still, it was always then for me like, oh, if it does happen to me, I want to be at home. I want to be with my mom. I want to have comfort. So it just became this bigger thing. Where even just probably it wouldn't have been enough to just look at the food. You'd have to look at the stress as well.
Yeah.
So I think for people who are listening, it's really important that, okay, yes, we don't know what portion of their IBS or their anxiety is just pure stress, but some of it might be, if you're having gut issues, some of it might be while you're eating. So it's important to look at from both sides.
Yeah, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think people need to know that IBS can be managed. You know, it can
people
be
people just think there's, it's like a sentence. I thought it was like, well, this is it now for life. This is great.
Yeah,
I'm sentenced.
And I'm like, it could be just garlic. Listen, you know. So it could be just one thing. So one of the common ways, especially if people have IBS, that's diarrhea dominant, or with bloating and distension. And it's worth noting with IBS, there's nearly always pain and discomfort. And if you're feeling pain and discomfort all day, every day, or in bouts, that's enough to send you a bit. You know, it's not good for your mental health. Let's put it that way. So the thing is that what you do is you do a 4-week low FODMAP diet. You pull out the fermentable carbohydrates and then you reintroduce them. And that takes about 4 weeks. So in around 8 weeks, you know what you're intolerant to and or if you're intolerant to something, if you are, what you're intolerant to. And most importantly, how much can you have before you have symptoms? Because when it's an intolerance, you can have a little, just not a lot. And then once you can pinpoint what fermentable carbohydrate actually is causing a lot of your symptoms, you can actually, like, just say take lactose. There might be a threshold point. So you'll be fine for having a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then once you go over that, you might get diarrhea or bloating or something like that, or gas. And once you know the threshold, you can either stay below it and be fine, or else you can be like, oh, screw it, I want to eat that 99, I'm going to have it. Or else you can take lactase enzymes. So there's solutions to it, and there's ways around it. And when you can manage your IBS, it gives you food freedom, really.
Yeah, and that immediately takes away some of the anxiety, because you don't feel like you're a prisoner and you can't go, you know, further than 100 yards from your house. People get overwhelmed by the word FODMAP. It just sounds like, oh, there's a lot of science there. So can you just sort of break that down in very simple terms?
Yeah, so what FODMAP stands for is something
fermentable oligosaccharides.
Disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. Fair play to you.
Thank you. You taught me well.
So they're fermentable short-chain carbohydrates. They go into your small intestine. They draw water in, leading to diarrhea in some people and leading to kind of your small intestine blowing up like a water balloon. Then they go into your large intestine, where we have so much bacteria. So the bacteria, we can't see it with a naked eye, but if you put the bacteria from your colon on a weighing scales, it would weigh more.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
In your brain.
Oh my God.
I know, there's that much bacteria and you can't see it. But anyway, so the FODMAPs go into the large intestine, where there's all that bacteria. The bacteria eat the FODMAPs. It's their food. A byproduct of them eating the FODMAPs is that they produce gas. And too much gas can be created. It can be created too quickly and you simply can't cope. So gas, basically, you either fart it out, burp it out, or it goes into your blood and you breathe it out. But that colon then blows up like a balloon. And because the intestine's blown up like a water balloon and the colon, the large intestine's blown up like a balloon, that distension of, or that blowing up like a balloon effect of your intestines, that's what causes the pain and discomfort in people with IBS because they have what's called visceral hypersensitivity. Okay. So they discovered this in a very, so they got a group of people with IBS and a group of people without, and they shoved balloons up their bottoms and blew up the balloons. I know. Who signs up to these things? And the thing is that when they blew up the balloons, the people with IBS were squirming in discomfort much sooner and quicker than the people without. Yeah. And then they said, okay, well, maybe they're just all very sensitive people or something like that. So they put their hands in ice baths and they had the exact same reaction at the exact same time. So it wasn't peripheral hypersensitivity in the periphery of their body. It was visceral. It was on the inside. So again, that... the intestines blowing up like balloons, what that does, that because of that visceral hypersensitivity or the very sensitive gut, that's what leads to the pain and discomfort.
Wow. Oh my God. And that's just so anxiety inducing in itself.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, it's the worst. So where should someone start if they're having, okay, let's just take for example, someone who was like me, who's having a lot of anxiety in their life. And then we look at someone who just has it the odd time.
Yeah.
If they're saying I'm having my stomach is always at me, I'm anxious and I'm having panic attacks, that kind of thing, from a nutrition perspective, where should they begin?
Well, don't go it alone because you'll actually waste time trying to do it by yourself. Go to a dietitian that's a registered dietitian that's trained in the low FODMAP diet, and they'll talk you through it, and then they'll give you a list of foods you eat and foods you don't eat for 4 weeks. And, you know, they can help you in terms of like eat this for breakfast, eat this for lunch, that sort of thing. But if you try and do it alone, the information on the internet isn't very accurate and you'll end up not doing it properly. You'll waste time and it'll be stressful because you'll be trying something that doesn't work. And what could be more stressful than that? Because I think when people have anxiety and they have gut issues and they're kind of going, oh, I heard this works in more than 3 out of 4 people or in more than 80% of cases. And then they try it and it doesn't work for them. And the panic.
Well, I had
or the
that,
panic
yeah.
that it doesn't work fast enough.
Because I remember texting you being like, I've been doing this for 5 days. I'm not feeling any better. And you're like, you're just probably very in a hypersensitive state and your gut is angry at you right now and it's going to take time. But I like, if you're anxious by nature, you're going to be like, like, what's wrong with me? Why is it working?
I know. And the way that I probably described it to you, and I've described it even by email today to another client, is simply that your gut is irritable bowel syndrome. It's in the name. Your gut is irritated. You know, it's been irritated for years. If you were in a bad mood for years and years and years, how long would it take you to calm down? Mm-hmm. You know, so just give it time. And I think when people have anxiety as well, that they worry that their body isn't going to have the same reaction like everyone else. They worry that it's not happening
same.
Fast enough.
Yep.
They worry that they're an anomaly.
Yeah.
That they're like, what happens if I'm the 20% of people?
Who has no effect on.
Exactly.
Oh, God, you're literally in my mind.
There is a plan A, B and C with all of these things. So sometimes with people, I do the low FODMAP diet, but I also, I have plans B, C, D, E, like loads of them.
Okay.
So I would go, okay, well, I would like you if you're up for it to start yoga. I would like you to take these probiotics. I would like you to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So
you're not just looking at literally the food. You're looking more holistically, even though you're a dietitian.
Yeah.
So like, if you go to someone good, they should be considering the fact that maybe there is lifestyle influences like stress from work that are also playing.
Yeah. Exactly. And the thing is, even with diet, it's not just. We have more tools in our belt than the low FODMAP diet.
Yeah.
So, for example, I had to put someone on low FODMAP diet and what we call a low residue diet the other day, just simply because their diarrhea was that bad.
Oh.
But it's wonderful when you treat it and someone gets symptom relief. I had the most, oh, she was wonderfully posh lady in, older lady in, and she had retired, right? She was so posh, she wore sunglasses throughout the clinic appointment, her Chanel sunglasses. And because she was so posh, it didn't seem weird at all. She was there in her fur and her Chanels, and she was fabulous. Anyway, complete symptom relief, and she burst into tears. Aww. And she was, it was simply because she could get her social life back. She could get back on the golf course, and people had wondered where she was, and she retired, and she hadn't been able to play golf like she had planned to all day every day because of her IBS being so bad. And it was like one of the most, it was years and years and years ago, but it was one of the most loveliest moments of my life. Because, you know, as a dietitian or healthcare professional, you kind of go, okay, well, you know, you're trying to save people's lives, you know, but really adding quality.
Give them back the quality of life.
Of life is huge.
Because, like, for me, and I think it's definitely started with the gut, and then it became a bigger, more anxious thing where I didn't know which came first. But I didn't go anywhere. Like, I didn't go away for years. I only just went to Thailand on my honeymoon. I remember texting you being like, first of all, I was so nervous. I'm so nervous about the prospect of getting sick because I've always struggled with it, and people say, oh, you'll definitely get a bug in Thailand. And I was like, why would anyone go? Like, will you be fine? You just bounce back. I'm like, no, I won't. I'll be so upset. Like, I will cry. I went to Thailand and I felt better than I had ever felt before.
It's naturally quite a low FODMAP diet. And Thailand, because when I have people who have IBS and they're like, I'm going to Thailand and I'm really worried, I'm like, don't be. Your gut will really behave when you're there.
I just couldn't believe it. And in a way, it was just such a relief that, like, wow, maybe I don't need to be stuck at home in Ireland all the time. You know, it just gave me back a sense of, just opened up the world to me, you know, from, and it really was just to do with my gut, which then made me relax because, you know, I was, the first few days after eating meals, I was like, like, you know, have I gotten Ebola or something? And then I started to kind of like, I'm actually kind of, I was afraid to say it out loud in case I caught some bug. Like, that's how much I'm afraid of being sick in my tummy, puking or the shits. And I started to really ease into it and being like, oh my God, like, I've been missing out so much. And I remember when I sat down with you and you didn't just say, oh, you're probably just a bit stressed, and I would have wanted to punch you. And
you might have.
Yeah. It was, but that, I've had that so many times where you're like, well, I've come away having no answers. And yeah, you are like, well, of course I'd be fucking stressed. But with you, it was just, for me with anxiety, right, it always comes back to super, super practical and like science. Yeah. And yes, you can do loads of otherworldly stuff that helps you relax. And if that's great, fine. But I really find what research is there done for you to be able to sit down and say, well, these foods create distension or bloating or diarrhea, and they're irritating your gut, and that's going to make you anxious because you don't want to feel that way. And that's going to feed into this bigger thing of anxiety. If we take those away, which we can do, and you're going to feel better, you're going to lessen your anxiety. And I was just like, thank you so much for making me feel like, A, I'm not gone mad.
Yeah.
B, I'm not doing this to myself. And C, there is something that I can do other than just relax.
Well, you see, the thing is, when someone has anxiety, it's over top reaction to a situation. But the thing is, if you have IBS and you're miserable with it, that's, you know, that's not an overreaction to the situation that you're in. Like, if you're having diarrhea, if you're getting bloating, if you're getting distension, if you're in pain and discomfort all the time, it's the most normal and healthy reaction in the world to feel miserable about that. You know, so it was kind of, it's a situation where you can say to someone with anxiety, like, your reaction to your gut symptoms aren't over the top. Everyone would feel miserable with these symptoms, you know. And it's nearly kind of saying that and giving people permission to actually kind of go, oh, do you know, this
it's
isn't
justified.
This is actually a healthy, normal reaction to having gut issues. This isn't someone with anxiety's reaction to having these gut issues.
I think, though, for me, it definitely made me, all the years of feeling unwell made me so mentally kind of hypersensitive to if I ever felt a twinge. Like, you know, when we were in Thailand and I did have like maybe one or two days where maybe I was just a bit rumbly for like 10 minutes and I was like, you know, I straight away panic. And Barry's like, oh, like, I felt a little bit dodgy there for a second. But his mind will never go like, oh my God, this is going to be food poisoning, you know. And he's like, just the difference in us in that I will think, and then I panic. So I was, we were like, we had to go on a boat, and I was probably, my tummy probably twinged a little bit because I knew I have to be okay now to get on this boat, because what am I going to do if I don't feel well? And so my mind jumps to the, oh my God, is there a toilet? Oh my God, well, that was always the thing for me. Like, where is there going to be, like, if we're staying, I wouldn't stay in a hostel because I'm like, I'm not going to share a toilet. What if I have diarrhea? Like, so I still have to work on, like, on from a psychological perspective on trying to be, you know, okay, well, actually, I haven't been sick in Thailand, so is there any need to panic? And that's like another layer.
But the thing is there's also the thing of, are you just being a girl about it? And I hate bringing gender to it, but it's so true. Like, you go into a primary school and the little girls aren't doing poos in the toilets. The little boys are. Do you know, it's a there is a gender divide in what we think is acceptable. Because in a workplace, women do, they much rather, and I have that with, see that with every one of my clients, women would much rather poo at home or poo in private. And they don't want to poo in a stall beside their friends. And while guys are like, you know,
yeah, they don't care. They spend half an hour bringing the magazine, like,
oh, you can see them walk with the newspaper under their arms and stuff. And even, you know, stay-at-home mums, like, they're often very constipated. And I'm like, it's because you don't get to poo alone. You know, there's always someone in the bathroom with you. So there is a natural kind of, and we do need to break down those social barriers where we go to girls, like, it's okay to fart. It's okay to poo. It's normal to poo. Yeah. And we are so funny about that. Yeah, and there definitely is a girl-boy divide. And with IBS, people are like, oh, why is there more of, why do more women than men have IBS? And it's always put down to hormones. But I do think there's an element to that, because I was camping in a camper van in France and going from campsite to campsite. And they're unisex loos. And I'm sitting in the loo beside a man going, geez, he's terrible IBS. But he probably doesn't think, oh, no, there's anything wrong with that.
Oh, no.
Like, he's just farting away, like, not a bother. And I,
oh, we would die.
We would die. We would also put a clinical diagnosis on that. Yeah, I would be like, I know, that definitely isn't healthy bowel movements.
Full disclosure, to this day, Barry laughs at me. I haven't brought myself to be able to do a poo in his family house.
Oh, I have loads of friends that, like, they would go away with their boyfriend for a weekend and they would be like, I didn't poo for the weekend.
Oh my God.
I am in so much pain. Yeah.
Oh, like the moment that I was able to let myself rip in my relationship changed everything, because I remember we were living together and I was still afraid to fart and I would be so bloated and I'd be lying there writhing around in discomfort and like, wait, is he asleep yet? Trying so hard to let it out really silently. And then eventually I was like, listen, I just can't live like this. And it's been amazing ever since. Takes away some of their own.
My first fart around Ben was by accident. I was waking up in the morning kind of going, oh, this is bliss, you know, happy in love, living together. And then, and I nearly died. I actually nearly died. And he was laughing, not at the fart, but on my over the top reaction to my fart. He just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. But then, you know, then I got pregnant and then all dignity went out the window.
No, I know.
He's seen everything.
Yeah, but that's when you know you're in a good relationship and you can get past it. But I remember even like from when I was working full time in an office and then I went freelance, like every day coming home, I would feel and look like I was about 6 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And then I would just deflate, you know, bit by bit over the evening. But when I went freelance and I was at home and I had more flexibility, I didn't find it as bad at all, because I obviously was like, you know, farting freely and not feeling like ashamed and, you know, waiting to go into the toilet when I think going to the toilet, right, if you're in an all-female cubicle and you feel like, okay, I can go in here, it's fine. But like a woman is not going to sit there in the office and just parp away out loud. But Barry tells me that people in work just sit there and lift up one cheek.
Yeah. Oh, I know, my dad does.
Is it so bad for our gut? This is going way off topic of anxiety, but is it so bad for our gut to be holding that in?
Oh, yeah. So we have this thing called the gastrocolic reflex, and it means like, you know, after you eat, you might need to poo. And women ignore that often because they'll be in work or they'll be at their friend's house or be their in-laws or something like that and not feel comfortable pooing. So it's that holding it in. See, we learn to nearly ignore what our body is telling us.
Yeah.
And if you ignore what your body is telling you, and that goes with hunger and all of these symptoms, but when you ignore what your body's telling you, there will be consequences from that. And so even part of my job as a dietitian, I'm like, you know that if you put tissue down in the loo, just on top of the water,
you won't hear it.
You won't hear it. So I'm like, do a crisscross with the toilet paper, and I have all of these things.
Body training.
Yeah, and it's simple things. And I'm like, and do you know that if you you know, light a match, or do you know that there's actually these baby wipes that you can actually, you know, you can flush now, the flushable baby wipes, because, you know, if people are having diarrhea all the time, they get a sore bum, you know. So it's all of these things. And I'm like, do you know about this cream? So I'm actually giving people the tools that to nearly sometimes overcome some of their fears.
For me, sometimes it's a time thing, like where if I feel like, oh God, this isn't like happening too easily, I'm just going to be like, get back up there now, wait till I get home. I'm not going to sit here, because the shame of coming out being like, well, you clearly were in there doing a shite. So hard. And that's just like, you're sitting there getting anxious about that. So what we're talking about now is very specifically gut related anxiety, right? But for people who are like, please stop talking about your pooing and orifices, if they are experiencing anxiety in their gut, it's not a problem, which is probably a smaller group of people. What they probably don't take the diet thing as seriously.
Yeah, but the thing is that there's loads that you can do. So even the fact that, go back to what I was saying about the brain, this fatty blob. And, you know, what you want is that brain to be made up of good fats and unsaturated fats. So that's why it's so important. If I were to say follow one dietary approach, it would be the Mediterranean diet. You know, so that's full of nuts and seeds and olive oil and oily fish. They couldn't be any better for the brain, because they're healthy fats and you want your brain to be made up of healthy fats. And then the Mediterranean diet has lots of important nutrients in it, vitamins and minerals. And that's why beans, peas and lentils and other legumes that are in the Mediterranean diet, as well as all the plants that are the fruit and the veg, are so positive for someone. So I'd encourage them, if they were going to follow it a dietary approach, it would be the Mediterranean diet. I'd encourage them as well to focus on hydration. Nearly hydration first and foremost, because even with 2% dehydration, our mental acuity, so our speed of thought and accuracy of thought, reduces. Yeah. And lots of people are 2% dehydrated.
Jesus, I'm saying, but 50%.
Yeah, you're like a little raisin. But you see, hydration is so important. So make sure that you're well hydrated. So you get your weight in kilograms, you times by 35, and that's how much water and fluid you need to be drinking at a basic level every single day. And if you're a sweaty person, you might need more. Or if it's hot outside, or you're
exercising.
Yeah. Or you're wearing too hot, too many layers for the day, that sort of thing. So I'd encourage people to focus on their hydration too. But we can't ignore the impact that alcohol has on someone's mental health. In the same way, we can't ignore the impact that caffeine can have on someone's anxiety.
Or sugar.
So I have someone who... I had someone in yesterday actually to clinic, and he was so sensitive to coffee, and he didn't realize it, and he was about to get up and make a speech, but he was nervous about making the speech, so he had an espresso or two because everyone else did, and he couldn't remember anything he was saying.
And you'd probably be shaking.
He was shaking and he goes, oh my God, I'm having a panic attack. And he drove straight to St. Pat's Hospital and they were like, you know, it might have just been the coffee.
Yeah, I know.
And he was just that hypersensitive to it. And some people are that hypersensitive to caffeine. But most people are sensitive to alcohol. Like, alcohol is a depressant for a lot of people. So if you suffer from your mental health, do look at your alcohol intake. And I know people who have had, when people have a bad day, they might go, oh, I'd love a glass of wine or something.
That's the thing.
And so sometimes people will have one glass of wine and they'll feel better.
Yeah.
And actually, well, it might seem mad for a healthcare professional to say this, but it might have actually been a right thing to do, because
it works like medication, yeah.
But then the thing is that alcohol, especially taken in excess, so more than a drink basically, that can have a depressant effect. And it's the next day. How does it affect you the next day? And some people get, I know, what we call the fear or the loser complex, and just their serotonin is so low and they feel so bad, and it can last days. It might not even just last one day. And on a more serious note, you can't hide from the figures that show that alcohol is very much present in a significant number of suicides. So, you know, alcohol, when it comes to mental ill health, we can't ignore it. I know in Ireland we like to ignore the negative impacts of alcohol, but we just can't.
It's such a slippery slope, because I find sometimes if I've been stuck and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna have a glass of Prosecco, if I'm a bit overwhelmed. Like when I went to the Late Late Show, I had probably several glasses of wine before I went on because I was so nervous. And it, in the short term, it gives you, it does give you relief. It slows your blood down, everything, you know, it makes you feel relaxed, takes the edge off. But I do, now I would only, I probably would only ever have like 2 glasses of something. Yeah. And I don't know if that's considered excessive. Maybe it is. But like back in the day when my anxiety was a lot worse and I'd go out and have a good few drinks, the next day my anxiety would be just horrific. Yeah. But I would almost feel, because my anxiety was so bad, I needed to have the drink when I was out to be relaxed, having a good time out. So then I was in this cycle of like, I can't win at all. So I think alcohol is just, is such an important one, especially for the day after.
Yeah, and I'd encourage people who maybe the day after, when they are feeling that way, that the most important thing is get out, get fresh air, mm-hmm. and don't be alone.
Yeah.
You know, so you're probably not going to be the best crack with your mates. Yeah. You're going to be a bit, you know, low.
But and way more susceptible to anxious thoughts. And
absolutely. And I would focus on nourishing your body, eating well, eating balanced meals, getting your hydration up. But I would focus on, I would do a bit of healthy exercise and get outside in the fresh air, and you'll feel so much better for it.
When it comes to caffeine and sugar, I take it as I go. So I don't have a caffeine-free diet. I don't have a sugar-free diet. I love sugar. But I kind of, if I'm having a particularly anxious week, I'll know that it's only going to stimulate me more and exacerbate it more. So I'll personally know now to ease off. Like I remember at was 2 Christmases ago, I was really, really anxious. For some reason, Christmas always kind of gets me. I feel under pressure to be well and everyone having a great time. And I remember even just having like one Cadbury's roses from the tin and feeling the effects of that making me kind of get jittery straight away. And I decided I just wasn't going to eat any chocolate or have any sugar. Like I had it in bread and stuff, but you know, I mean like sweets and stuff and sugary alcohol and drinks. I just didn't have any of it. And after a couple of days, my anxiety calmed right down. And I really did feel like that was purely because I took out way those things, those very easy things that were just adding fuel to the fire. And the same with caffeine. If I'm, you know, before I do a presentation, Jesus, I wouldn't touch caffeine. But if I'm having, I mean, I don't have coffee at all. I don't even like it. But you know, if I'm having like a normal few days, like I'll have a Diet Coke, it'll be fine. But if I'm a little bit overwhelmed or there's something in my mind and I have a Diet Coke, I'll feel a bit jittery. So I kind of need to just sort of listen to my body. And I don't think people realize how quickly and how immediate those things can really increase your anxiety or decrease it if you take it away.
Yeah, so they're temporary energy givers. So the likes of, and they do, and they are energy takers in the longer term. So in the very short term, they're energy givers. And sometimes when you're in an anxious state, the last thing you need is more energy pumping into
you. You're stimulated enough. Like
I know, you don't need more stimulation. So when it comes to things like caffeine, like sugar, I think people, like you said, you listen to your body. Your body, our bodies are communicating with us all the time. And I don't think, because, you know, people kind of go about their day quite mindlessly, but if you go about your day a bit more mindfully and are aware of everything around you but also everything in you that your body is always trying to communicate to you, and to listen to it and react and follow that gut feeling. We know that the gut is the second brain, and we know it even simply, and we've known it for a long time, simply by our language. We always talk about that gut feeling, don't we? And we feel most of our feelings in our gut. You know?
What is the statistic about serotonin? 98% is found in
the gut? Yeah, so 80-90% of the serotonin is found in your gut. And it's interesting because even in certain types of IBS, we know that the amount of serotonin in your gut can actually affect which type of IBS you have, constipation dominant or diarrhea dominant. And so much so that because there's around 90% of our serotonin in our gut, sometimes when people have tried lots of dietary approaches, lots of little other approaches, sometimes a GP might prescribe the smallest dose of an antidepressant. And it's not an antidepressant for your head because it's such a tiny dose, but because there's 9 times more serotonin in your gut than your head, that tiny dose has 9 times effect, basically, or more of an effect in your gut. So it can have that tiny dose of an antidepressant, or that serotonin reuptake inhibitor can actually have a significant impact on your gut symptoms, because that's where the serotonin is, and that the serotonin is involved in gut symptoms.
Wow. So if anyone's listening and they're thinking, okay, I have something coming up that's making me a bit anxious, maybe they're just in an anxious phase that they can't put their finger on why it is, what very practical things can they do this week? What should they maybe pull out of their diet or just ease off, and what should they introduce, even things like green vegetables and stuff?
Yeah, so I'd encourage them to eat regularly. So, you know, you don't want longer than 4 or 5 hours between meals. You don't want your blood sugar levels to drop. I'd focus people to eat regularly, drink lots of water. So girls need around 2 liters above, boys need around 2.5 or above. I'd encourage them to eat balanced meals. So is there a protein source going into breakfast? Mm-hmm. Is there a protein source going into lunch and dinner? Is there enough fruit and veg going into breakfast, lunch and dinner? So 2 pieces of breakfast, 2 pieces of lunch, 2 pieces of dinner. And by piece, I mean handful, you know. And then put some healthy fats into each of those meals. So, for example, it could be porridge made on oats, which is the carbohydrate, milk, which is the protein source, nuts, which are the healthy fat source, and 2 fruits. Lunch could be veg soup, which is the fruit or veg source. Brown bread, which is carbohydrate. It could be hummus or guacamole, just say, and chicken. So the hummus and guacamole provide healthy fats. The chicken is the protein. And then with dinner, it could be potatoes being the carbohydrate, oily fish being the protein, 2 veg, and maybe some, you can roast the veg in olive oil. So again, there's a healthy fat source, so that each and every single meal that you're eating is balanced. When it comes to snacks, balance them too. So focus on a protein and fiber snack so that it gives you both. So for example, hummus and veg sticks, or nuts and fruit, or yogurt and fruit, so that you're getting that protein source with the fruit or veg. So that's what your snacks need to be to keep your blood sugar levels a bit more balanced.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.